I'm Laura Vinroot Poole of Capital, and this is What We Wore. Jeffrey Costello and Robert Tagliapietra are the dapper duo behind Costello Tagliapietra. Affectionately known as the Lumberjacks of Fashion, I'm inspired by the innovative ways they've continued to make beautiful work over the last 30 years. I haven't seen you all for, I guess younger people would say, like, pre and post pandemic, but for us, it's pre and post recession, right? And I don't think I've seen y'all since before that. And, you know, I'm so happy to be carrying the collection again, but it does feel like I'm like, was that 20 years ago? Was that 5 years ago? I don't even know. But what I know is that y'all have been in business a really long time.
Yeah, no, isn't that crazy? It's like, it's,
yeah.
I mean, that time feels like, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like 5 years ago. So it's,
But it wasn't, right? It was like 15 years ago, right? Now
I'm gonna pretend I'm gonna pretend it was 5 years ago.
15
And then sometimes I'll see like somebody from the industry from that period. I'm like, oh my God, like that person still exists. Like I don't even, you know, like it was such an intense time. Anyway, it's hard to reconcile that. I think it was really interesting to go through the pandemic because of the fear of the younger kids, because they just had never been through anything earth-shattering. And for us, 2008, like that was it. I mean, bring anything on after that, right?
It was so brutal. I mean, the pandemic, yeah, it was weird. Pandemic didn't feel as brutal because I think people were still buying. They were just buying differently. So, I mean, once we got past that initial sort of like, what happens next, people still wanted to look pretty, so...
Yeah, even in their houses or on Zoom. Well, you guys look gorgeous on Zoom. I don't know this. Tell me where y'all are from.
I'll always be talking over Jeffrey. So I'm from Westchester, New York. So I grew up in New York, like first in Yonkers, then we moved to like Pleasantville, and then I moved to New York to go to Parsons.
Okay, and then Jeffrey, where are you from?
Bristol, Pennsylvania, which is in Bucks County. And of course, the moment I was able to, I fled.
Did you love anything about growing up there?
I had some close friends, but it's going to sound like a classic story. I was very different.
Yeah.
And for a very working class area. And of course, I thought I was a millionaire when I was like 5 years old. And I had to dress and be that way.
How did you know that New York was the place that you would feel like yourself or be able to be yourself?
I actually just from going there, coming up here on my own, like you with friends, we kind of like take a day off from school and go to New York.
And how about you, Robert?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny, like growing up in Westchester, so you're in such close proximity to the city. So, I mean, it sounds crazy to say this out loud now, but like back then, like in high school, we would go to nightclubs. We would go to Limelight, go to Palladium and Pyramid. So we did that at the age of 15 and 14. So I know it's so funny to say. Even to our like younger interns and assistants, like it's such a different night scene now that, you know, back then you could go to an after hours club at 4 a.m. and be 14 years old and nobody knew, nobody cared.
What are both of y'all's first fashion memories?
Here's a funny story. Like, ironically, we found this out after we met, obviously. We both had grandmothers, both named Teresa, who worked at
what?
Norman Norell at like different times, but like they both worked at Norman Norell. So that's
wow.
The perspective we grew up with, which is like sitting by the sewing machine. I mean, this is like a sort of a tale a lot of designers have lived through, right? Like it's probably a standard moment for some designers. But we grew up literally sitting next to our grandmother's sewing machine, you know, hearing it hum, watching them cut, going to fabric stores. So for me, it's like, and I'm probably speaking for you as well, but like for me, it's like that experience of watching things be made and watching people try it on. And I don't know if it made me want to do it right away, but like I was so fascinated by the whole, you know, the whole process of like making someone something that they were going to wear to a special event, right? Like that felt very special and beautiful.
Were they making things for girls in the family, women in the family, or was it outside of the home as well?
No, for me, it was all outside. Like they became like sort of the go-to for like prom dresses and like
wow,
wedding dresses and, you know, dresses like that, event dresses.
And do you remember having an opinion about the dresses at that time?
I used to also like my aunt's record collection was down there too. So I used to like rummage through her Donna Summer records and Diana Ross records. And I felt very much of like a fashion world that I didn't even know existed yet.
Obviously you went to Parsons. You knew that that was a possibility to do that as a career.
You know, so for me, no, I didn't know any of that. I didn't know of that world, or I wasn't paying attention. But I don't know. You knew, you were aware, right?
I knew. It's like, I knew it was what I wanted to do at a young age.
Jeffrey, was your experience the same as Robert's, sitting next to your grandmother and having her make clothes for people in the neighborhood or in the family, or how was that?
She was a little more selfish. She made them for herself. For the baby. She missed her job at Norman Earl. And she wanted to just keep that going. She's the only person, I know we always hear people claim that they could do this. She's the only person I ever met that could throw a piece of fabric on a table without a pattern and cut out a wedding dress. And I can't do that to this day.
And Jeffrey, were you opinionated about the things your grandmother was making? And did you, I mean, was it a dialogue with her or?
It was a dialogue, but it was more, I just wanted to learn. She was happy to teach me.
You both graduated from high school, and what was next for both of you? And what did you think was going to be next?
I mean, I went to Parsons, and ironically, I went for painting and not fashion. I felt like I wanted to be in the like world of painting. I felt like it was so exclusive, and I loved painting. And I really thought in my head, I thought that was a world that I romanticized a lot in my brain. And then once I guess it was around senior year when I met you, junior. I met Jeffrey, and he had a line at the time, and I started just helping out. And I jokingly say this a lot, like I just sort of pushed my way in, and I was like, oh, I'll run sales for you. I'll make some stuff. I broke plenty of his machines, and and that's sort of the catalyst for us working together. It was like this immediate sort of, he was working with all these great celebrities at the time, and I got to sort of be adjacent to that, and I just was romanced again by fashion.
You do look a lot alike. And at that time, did you recognize each other?
I mean, you know, we probably looked a little bit alike at the time, but it was probably more morphing towards.
And then Jeffrey, will you talk about how you came to have your own line and you moved to New York after high school?
I just right after high school, I moved to New York, and I did the typical thing, working at restaurants to pay the bills. I ended up at a fabric store on First Avenue called First Avenue Fabrics. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but it was where you would have like drag queens coming in, New York royalty, you know, just creative people coming in. And ironically, you get to learn a lot about fashion with these opinions that are coming through. I had a friend named Min Tometz that worked there also. She actually was one of the singers from a band called Pulsalama. At that point, she had left Pulsalama and was managing the fabric store. And she introduced me to Debbie Mazar.
Oh, wow.
And we hit it off really well right from the beginning. And it got to the point where Debbie would show up at my apartment with some fabric, sit down and tell me I want something. So I would spend the day making her evening look.
I love it. When you came to New York, Jeffrey, you had a sewing machine with you?
It was really, I lived in this tiny, tiny apartment on Mott Street. I think it's a shoe store now. I just did the thing of like, I found a table on the street, brought it in. It was big enough to cut my fabric. I found a sewing machine at the Salvation Army. It worked well enough.
I know you sat next to your grandmother and watched her sew, but you already innately knew how to sew?
No, she taught me. She made me sit down because I was so like enamored with her sitting there sewing and watching it. I got caught playing with it one day, and my punishment was I had to make myself something to wear because she wanted to know if it was something I really wanted to do.
And was it automatic?
It was. I mean, I ended up making myself a very heavy knit caramel and navy blue striped t-shirt that luckily I made it a little too big back then because I actually wore it until I was about like 23, 24 years old. It still fit at that point.
So, Robert, you met Jeffrey just from being in the neighborhood and
So yeah, funny story. So there was this nightclub called Sound Factory at the time. Jeffrey was working there. We sort of saw each other there and were too shy to talk to each other. Week after week, this went on for about 3 weeks. And finally, on like the third week, Jeffrey's friend, Lauren Roselli from Book of Love, came up to me and she was like, "You guys, I'm not coming here another week to talk to each other. Here you go. You're Robert, you're Jeffrey, go talk." And from that point on, it was like, it was funny. It just, we got along very well. So we just immediately, we immediately got together and we started working together. So it's been like 30 years now of us working together and living together, our lives intertwined in every which way.
How long was it until you moved to Brooklyn? Because you've been in Brooklyn most of your career, right?
So when I met Jeffrey, he had inherited Keith Haring's apartment on Broome Street when Keith died.
Not to own, just
No, not
to
to,
rent.
it was a rental.
Right, but still
Inherited the lease.
amazing.
Another reason why I whittled my way into there because it was while I was in college. So this is another funny story. When I was in college, my little studio, which was off of our bedroom, was actually like Basquiat's studio for a little bit. It was painted completely black. It was amazing. And there was like, there was still artwork on the walls at that point.
My God.
So we were living on Broome Street for quite a while until we ended up in Brooklyn.
That's not the Basquiat studio where Angelina Jolie is now, right? Is it?
No, this is so that famous photo of Keith Haring on the toilet?
Yeah.
That's that apartment.
Amazing. Oh my God. So Jeffrey, you were able to pay rent by making these clothes for people and working at the nightclub?
It was mostly job related because people were poor back then. Because I always looked at it as a learning experience. I got to experiment different bodies and shapes.
And Robert, was it clear to you when you first met and saw what he was doing that this was a thing, that this was something that could be a career for both of you?
It was like 1994, so it was like there was a lot of energy around fashion in New York at that time, probably more than even when I graduated high school in 1992. So like it just was like there was such a bubble happening in New York at that time, and it was everything from like the simple streetwear of like X Girl to like Mizrahi and all of the New
Yeah.
York designers, and then you had Helmet coming up, right? Like so there was like so much cool happening everywhere that like at that point, I was completely enamored with the idea of being in fashion again. And Jeffrey, he's a little humble, but at the time, he was getting a lot of press for his line at the time. And quite honestly, I'll say like I was quite a celebrity in college at that point because I was dating Jeffrey. So,
And wait, was the collection called Jeffrey Costello?
yeah.
Yeah. And Robert, did you finish at Parsons? Did you finish in art?
Yeah, I was the worst student, so yeah. I'll say yeah with like complete like eye rolling.
And so then when you graduated, and did y'all start immediately and did it become Costello Tagliapietra?
I'll be honest, it started with me doing an on-set tailoring gig for a while.
Okay.
What ended up happening was we created like some really good contacts, and I think our first job was Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile Tour.
Cool.
So we got to actually design and make, I would say, at least 95% of what they wore on that tour.
That's insane. And you traveled with them?
No, I mean, I wish we
No,
did, but.
we FedExed everything.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, we started doing a lot of that work, like throughout the '90s, like late '90s, and that I think in a lot of ways it sort of like helped define what we wanted to do. And I know that sounds so crazy because they were like really, chaotically different, right? Like we were doing stuff for Bruce Springsteen and his wife. We were doing stuff for Nine Inch Nails, doing stuff for Fisher Spooner, whoever it was just what happened through that was that we started making things like at the, so it's funny, right? Like again, this is hard to imagine today, but like back then, stylists would call you for like projects that they were working on a shoot for ID. So they would say, oh, can you make a couple of things for this or Italian Vogue or this, and you would make these things, you would get press and these amazing,
Yeah.
editorials, but like there was nothing to sell. Like you didn't have a line.
Right. And nowhere to sell it, really. I mean, you had Barney's, but yeah.
No, and that it's funny that you say that because we actually got an order from Isetan. And I was like, what does this even mean? Like, what are we doing with this? Like, they want these pieces. And I was like, who's making them? We ended up making a lot of that stuff. And I'm probably shooting forward, but like, that's literally how Costello started was that we kind of just put together a little line. Xerox did at our, I went to my brother's, my brother worked at MTV at the time. And they had these beautiful, like, photocopiers. And they just had an incredible setup. They spared no dime. I did a few copies of our lookbook, which I shot on a broken Schleppy mannequin,
She was broken.
and she was broken, yes. And sent it to Vogue, and we got a call from Vogue saying that they wanted to do an article. So like,
My God.
I think it's like, it was just this like magic of like just doing, and just like continuing to do what we loved, and it just started registering with people.
Creating things for performers. I mean, you sounded like you both were really into music and clubs. Are you using different materials because you're thinking about what they're going to look like on stage and how much Bruce Springsteen moves? And because that sounds like a completely different business. And you have several of one thing so that if they rip it in the first set, they can put a new one on or.
Well, yeah, I guess it's like mini production, but like, you're absolutely thinking it's a bit more like costume design, right? Like I imagine that's what like it would be like designing costumes for Broadway or something. You're in the within the paradigm of like someone else's concept.
They have stylists talking to you and saying, I need something for Bruce and Patty.
Yes.
Is that so they give you the directive and you create pieces and yeah.
Yeah, and with like, and then with some projects, you would get to be like sort of, relationships change, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, we're running this whole show now, and so it depended on the project, but yeah, it was fun because it was, at that time, and I think it's happening again today, but like there was a long period where celebrities were not paying for things, and
Right.
at that time they were, and I think they are again, but like. We sort of left that world because, the Paris Hilton era happened, right? Where like everyone was like sending boxes of clothes to these celebrities. And you're like, well, they don't need me to make a pair of jeans if YSL 74 pairs of jeans.
Right.
So yeah, it just the industry shifted so much that we were like, okay, well, we'll do our own thing now.
Tell me about creating that first collection. What do you remember most about creating it?
So for us, it's weird, right? Like we went right to like for we both narrowed in on Jersey right away, right? Like we were working with this American mill called Jasco at the time. They were the mill who created all of Halston's jerseys and Jeffrey Bean. So and this is a beautiful story too. Our factory that we work with to this day, we met her through a private client we were working with who had a little office in her factory, but. The reason why I tell you this is this factory, her father did all of Jeffrey Bean. And it was like this
And
kiss
Boston.
and Halston. So it was this kismet moment of like
Wow.
we were like, we're doing Jersey. She deeply understands how to cut and touch and because it's Jersey's not t-shirt, right? Like it's an expensive fabric that needs a real delicate hand. So yeah, that was a beautiful start to our business because we're like, okay, this is easy, right? Oh.
So you're featured in Vogue, and then do you bring the collection down to Barney's or?
Yeah, we met with Julie Gillhart and Judy Collinson a few times, and They both took a liking to us, and we're super grateful for that from the day one, right? Like that was sort of our dream store at the time, and it was just
Yeah.
immediately like they took us on and really worked with us too, right? Like it because at the time, there's a lot of embellishments going on. Our dresses were these like sort of quiet, romantic little moments in the back, and these like odd colors, and it. Everything else had like jewels all over it and rhinestones and we had these like just draped little, taupe dresses in the back.
And how many pieces were in that first collection, do you remember?
Our first collection that took like I would say our first collection that really took off, which was probably our collection two, was probably about like 24 looks.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You did fashion shows then too, right?
Yeah, our first fashion show was a little one that we just, we wanted to just introduce ourselves, and there was a hurricane that morning, and it was a shock that it even happened, but it actually did happen. But then the second show was really the that was the moment that felt like a show. And
How did people find out about, I mean, people were there in person, but then how did the public outside of that find out about designers? Was it from being published in Vogue, or was it people traveled to New York and went to Barney's?
I would say at that time, like, being in Vogue changed our lives at that time because all of a sudden we had like these socialites calling us from other countries, like wanting to. So we were on the fourth floor walk up in Carroll Gardens. This is before Carroll Gardens was Carroll Gardens of
Right,
today.
right,
And we were on the corner, and across was just a, this little spot that was like a no parking zone. So there were so many times we would look down from our like fourth floor walk up, and you would see this like beautiful Jaguar pull up. Someone would come up, ring our bell. We would have to go down and like appease them that they were, that they would have now have to walk up four flights. And that was happening a lot, right? Like we used to do that. It's so crazy to think about it now, but people would do it, and people would come up and try things on, and it fully just came from that. It came from editorial, like. Magazines meant something at that time a lot. I think it meant different.
Yeah.
It meant something different at that time.
It was so important, and it also was so out of your control. Whereas now it's completely in your control because it's social media and you're doing it all yourself. But it's just like amazing. I mean, just to, it's hard for me even to put my head into that time where you had to have, you had to wish that some writer would find you interesting. You know, it's just crazy.
It is crazy, and it's same went to celebrities, right? Like you would like pray and hope that this certain stylist would care about your clothes enough to come, and that's why showrooms meant a lot at that point, right? Like
Yeah.
we're sort of aggregating a lot of the attention from different brands, and potentially you're getting gleaning other attention from off not off of the other brands, but in conjunction with. It's amazing to think about because it is so different now with social media because it's so easy in some ways.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. So everything went s hard but swimmingly until 2008.
We were lucky in that once we started, we got the CFD Vogue Fashion Fund 2 years in a row. We were like our second year, we were pulled into this New York fashion exhibit at the Victoria and Albert. I say it a lot, like we never worked for another brand. So we didn't really know what it meant to run a fashion business. We thought that like, okay, you make clothes, you sell clothes, you make millions of dollars. It wasn't happening. So we were like, what's not connecting here? Like, why are we not making millions of dollars? When the recession hit, it forced us to like take it seriously in some ways, right? Like we were all of a sudden we were like, okay, now everyone's like in the same position of selling nothing. We never had the big issue of like a bunch of big department stores. We were very lucky that we had stores like yours that actually cared about young brands and wanted to foster talent. And it was like, how do you just recenter yourself as a designer and create a brand that can be meaningful to people and just really start to analyze that. And maybe that's something that people do when they do work at big companies and they launch on their own. But like for us, we were very much just driven by making things that we love to make, but then it's like connecting that to the actual customer and really starting to make those sort of bigger steps of what your brand means.
What's the answer? I mean, what were the things that came up that changed?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've said this before, like Andre Leontali was somebody who took us under his wing from almost day one. And we're always so like insanely grateful for that, because this is a probably one of the smartest men. I joke about this all the time. Like I was always so like so proud of discovering somebody, and I would go to him and we would have lunch, and I'm like, oh, I found this illustrator. And he was like, oh no, like Wikipedia. Like,
Exactly.
you know, he always like he would be up in our apartment all the time telling us that we are dressmakers. We are dressmakers. And you know, I'm embarrassed to say I was almost angry when he used to say that to me, because I was like, I'm not just a dressmaker. I'm not just a dressmaker. And now I understand the beauty of what he was saying, right? Like it's
Yeah.
all we do. Like we make beautiful dresses. We know how to cut dresses. We know how to make patterns. We know, you know.
Yeah. Just from my perspective, because I see so much product and I buy so much product. I mean, you are dressmakers more than probably anybody in the store that we carry. Like, you know, just the details alone and the thought process and I mean, all of the things, it's very different from anybody else. You guys still all make your own patterns.
Yeah, that's I feel like that's important, right? Like
Yeah.
for us, it's like that process of drafting patterns, it's how we sort of think through ideas. And if we don't have that alone time to do that, it's we've lost something, I think, you know, and I don't know if other people can translate our hand as well as us. So for as long as we can, we'll always do it. It goes to everything, right? Like even making that first sample, like it's like I think like you touched upon, like the traces of vintage lace in there, the hand picking, you know, it's almost like intimate touch in some ways, right? Like there's a real romance to that, and for us, that act of getting dressed, it is very personal, and we're putting something we made on someone else's body, and there's something very personal about that, and you know, I think more than ever we're very aware of like. I mean, we should be acutely aware of like feeling what, like when we're consuming anything, you feel what someone's put into that, right? Like fast fashion, you know that there's darkness in there.
It's very clear in your, and I know it's also a really hard business and hard to make a profit, but it's so clear in your work that somebody like a person has made this and put so much love and care in it. It's very different.
Thank you. I mean, it's funny, you know, I'll say this, like there are even some pieces that we're still hand doing. So like to me,
Yeah.
I love that idea. And I think it's special. If you're, you know, I it goes back to like, you know, luxury clothing, you know, and what that really means, right? Like there's you're paying a premium for, you know, hopefully for something, right? Like not just for brand, but like for better fabrics, better care, better cutting, better everything. And I hope we can put that through.
It's on your body. I mean, it's touching you. It's you're going out into the world into it. And I think that it is, it's really clear when somebody's in something that was made for them and made with love and beauty and altruism. Tell me about your work with Resonance.
So it's funny, when we closed down in 2015, mainly because at that time, like so much of fashion was shifting DTC, and it really didn't make sense for what we were doing. And buyers were leaving by the droves, and you know,
Stores were closing.
stores were closing and everything was changing. And quite honestly, we needed a break, right? Like we just needed to take some time off. So you know, in that time off, we met our, you know, our one of our partners now, Lawrence Lenahan, who was thinking through this idea of Resonance, which was, you know, at its core, it was going to be an operating system for brands, like technology-infused fashion, mainly to run an on-demand business in a sustainable way, right? Like, you know, allowing for brands to do that. And we launched JCRT there, which is a men's shirt brand. And in 2016, And we also work for residents as well as creative directors and sort of guiding and helping other brands come on the platform and working with residents. So it's been great because it's actually given us another perspective, because we're so craft driven and so hand driven, and then working with a sort of technology company that's trying to in still keep that hand, keep that tradition, do everything you just mentioned, which is like make sure people are being paid living wages, approach fashion in a very sustainable, zero waste way.
Will you describe what Resonance is and what the platform does?
I liken it to an operating system for a brand, right? Like, so you imagine a system where you as a brand can have a product running on your site, and none of that product is ever made until a customer comes and purchases it. And at that point, it's then printed, cut, sewn, and shipped all under one roof. So it's sustainable and multifaceted, right? Like it's one where we're sort of owning our own factory, so we know what we're paying these craftspeople, we know what we're paying the engineers, we know the amount of water that's saved, the amount of energy that's saved through technology and AI. And at the end of the day, it's zero inventory. So for a brand like JCRT, we actually have like I think over 2,000 plaids, I'm not exaggerating,
Wow.
platform that we can run at any given time. And that's just something unheard of in the world of, fashion, because you couldn't own that many.
Has that collection been successful, and were you surprised by that?
So we weren't surprised because I think from our first article when Vogue called us the lumberjacks of fashion, we kind of knew there was probably a market for our plaid shirts. And I think, we've just been able to really think through a whole different kind of fashion company for us, right? Like for that world is very much driven by storytelling. Like so each one of our plaids at JCRT means something different, right? Like so we use the colors as a way to express something like an album cover,
Right.
an artwork, a book. So it connects to people in a very deep level of like the things they love. Then having done that, this is our frenetic lives, right? Like having worked on that, it's going well. Then we're like, okay, let's reintroduce Costello because we miss them. We have so much free time.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was going to ask. How do you balance all three? I mean, that seems like a lot of
We don't. We love what we do so deeply that it just, we've never been the type who like care about sleep as much as just getting work done and doing things. So it brings us so much joy. Like when we found out we sold to Capital again, that's just a magical moment for us, right? Like we're like,
Aw.
those are, that's why we're doing what we're doing.
I feel the same way though. I mean, I felt the same way when I was able to do it again, and I felt like, oh, like this is real. I felt the exact same way. How has your partnership changed since the 90s?
I don't know. I don't know if it has. Like, I think when you're working together and living together, you just sort of learn to interact in a certain way, and we probably have, it's probably the type of relationship a lot of people probably couldn't handle because we don't spend a lot of time away from each other ever. So I think you just have to sort of commit to, we had to make the decision to sort of commit to being together all the time in order to do all these things. I think over time you just sort of finesse that even more and more until you do sort of become one person. I do know what he's thinking at any given time.
I just think it's remarkable how much you've both evolved and how you've continued to do it, but in a different way and in your own way. I just think it's remarkable, really extraordinary.
Thank you. But it's like, I'm sure you feel the same way. It's these are the this is what you know how to do, right? Like
Yeah.
and you're put on this earth and you feel like this is your path, and at the end of the day, we get to make and be around beautiful things all day.
Yeah.
That doesn't ever leave. Like that feeling doesn't leave me. And that moment, it's still exciting, right? Like the moment you put these little ladies on the dress form or on an actual lady, you're like,
So true.
this is what, like, this is exactly like, this is beautiful.
On our pre-recording research, we asked questions, and one of our questions is, what did you once believe about yourself that's no longer true? And I thought your answer was so beautiful.
The most important thing for us is just to keep, reminding ourselves, to believe in our work, to believe in ourselves. And what that means for us is, you can sort of get lost at times, and that sort of going back to that belief, it starts to connect. The universe connects, and people start to sort of respond and believe and re react towards you. The more you believe in yourself, the more you believe in your work. And the opposite's true too. So I think for us, it's just to constantly remind ourselves that we are doing something that's valuable, that is meaningful to people, and it's meaningful to us. And I think that's important with any fashion brand, any designer or artist. It's connecting, what's important and driving you to the people that you're connecting to.
We have a question we ask on every podcast, and I'm excited to hear your answers. What did you both wear to the prom?
I went to the prom with my best friend Lucy, and trying to look like a gentleman, I went to the local thrift shop and I bought traditional tails.
I love it.
Lucky enough to find something that was in my size range.
That sounds really chic.
I went to my junior prom. There's a thrift store called Family Jewels in New York, and
Yeah.
I got a I remember I got some crazy looking 1920s or 30s tuxedo that I was just obsessed with. It did not fit me well at all. But
You couldn't sew at the time.
no, and I definitely I probably did not look very good. I don't have pictures, but I definitely thought I was cool to wear it. But yeah.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.